Morning. Today's daf in Shabbos is Mem Zayin. We are on the very bottom of Mem Vav Amud Beis, and we're finishing up today the third parak of the Masechta, and we are still continuing our discussion regarding Inyane Muksa. One of the major themes of the last four blot of the of this parak has been Muksa, and specifically the scope of Muksa. Exactly what is Muksa encompassed on Shabbos? Muksa Gzera D'Rabbanan. That one is not allowed to move things on Shabbos that do not serve a purpose towards Shabbos. So what exactly does it cover and encompass? And this is a Machlokas HaTanayim. We have been focusing on two opinions amongst the Tanayim. We were introduced earlier in this Masechta that there really are four Tanayim on the issue. And to my mind, I could also think of a fifth Tana on this issue as well. But there are four Tanayim on the issue in terms of where exactly what exactly Muksa encompasses. But nevertheless, we've been focusing really on two, primarily on the shitas of Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon. Rabbi Shimon lesei muksa, the Gemara's terminology, that Rabbi Shimon does not subscribe to muksa. But now, of course, the way we've understood it, as we've been discussing the last number of days, is that what Rabbi Shimon does is has a very limited scope of muksa, and Rabbi Shimon rejects most categories of muksa, but Rabbi Shimon still has some scenarios in which something would be muksa. And then, of course, we have the shita of Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Yehuda islay muksa. Rabbi Yehuda does subscribe to muksa, and he subscribes to the many categories of muksa: muksa machmas iser, muksa machmas mius, and a number of other categories. Rabbi Shimon does not subscribe to the category of migdud diskatze ben hashmashos, that just because something was muksa during ben hashmashos, it will become muksa for the balance of Shabbos. And Rabbi Yehuda does subscribe to that principle of migdud diskatze ben hashmashos. And these are the basic basic issues that we've been discussing the last number of days. And that means as follows, that when I have a lantern, a lamp that was lit going into Shabbos, so Rabbi Shimon says that while the lamp is lit, so then you're not allowed to move it. During its lit state, it's going to be muksa. But then after it goes out, even on Shabbos itself, so then it's no longer muksa. And then one can move the lamp on Shabbos for whatever needs that he would like. Obviously, according to Rabbi Shimon, you can't relight it. That goes without saying, but the lamp itself is not muksa according to Rabbi Shimon. On the other hand, Rabbi Yehuda says the lamp is muksa. And once it was muksa during the Ben Hashmashos period, it's muksa for the remainder of Shabbos. Good. So this is these are the basics. The Gemara right now is in the middle of trying to answer a question. The question the Gemara is trying to deal with is the following. According to Rabbi Shimon, while the lamp is lit, so one is not allowed to move it. The Gemara asks a really simple question. Well, why not? What exactly would be the problem according to Rabbi Shimon if one were to move the lamp while the lamp is lit? Meaning, obviously, his intention is not to put it out. And let's just for a moment say that the lamp actually goes out. And if the lamp goes out, that wasn't his intention. So we are going to just simply put together another sheet of Rabbi Shimon, which is a Dav Shein Miskaven is Mutter. That when one does an activity on Shabbos and his intention is not to violate a malacha, and we'll add also that the malacha is not inevitable, so then even if the malacha occurs, this falls into the category of a Dav Shein Miskaven, and therefore it's going to be Mutter. The classic example of Dav Shein Miskaven is, let's say, he dragged a bench along the ground. It's not a heavy bench, and it makes a groove in the ground. And it could have made a groove, it could not have made a groove, but it made a groove in the ground. According to Rabbi Shimon, that activity would be Mutter, because that's not his intention. His intention is just simply to get the bench from point A to point B. The fact that it made it a groove in the ground, it was an unintended consequence. And Rabbi Shimon therefore says it's mutter. So the Gemara says, so I'm not really understanding. So why can't I move the lamp even while it's lit on Shabbos? Even if the lamp was going out, that wouldn't be my intention. And this falls under the category of a Dav Shein Miskaven. And therefore it should be mutter. And the Gemara wants to know now, according to Rabbi Shimon, who doesn't subscribe to muksa, so let's move the lamp even while it's lit. That was the Gemara's question. The Gemara posed this question towards the end of yesterday's daf. The Gemara is right now struggling to come up with an answer. For a moment, the Gemara thought that, well, maybe Rabbi Shimon's Dav Shein Miskaven only affects Yisur D'Rabbanan, but not something that would be Malacha D'Araisa. The Gemara immediately rejects that. The Gemara says that's not true. When Rabbi Shimon says Dav Shein Miskaven is Mutter, he meant even if we're talking about a Malacha D'Araisa. So the Gemara says, fine. So Ela Marava. So continuing now with the Gemara struggling to find an answer. So the Gemara has an answer in response to this question. As we now turn to the top of Mem Zayin Amud Aleph, Hanach L'Ner Shem N'Pesil Ho V'Nenas Ebasis L'Davar Aser. So the Gemara introduces us to the idea of basis. Now we already kind of tinkered with the idea earlier in this parak, but the Gemara over here now spells out this idea. Shemen upsila, that when it comes to the oil, when it comes to the wick, it is a base for something which is usr. Now, what is the Gemara making reference to? So it's making reference to the flame. Rashi says so on the top of the Amud. Rashi says, L'shal heves. Digabi haimuksa mod Rebbe Shimon. Shakli tafel l'shal heves. Bo'o dabo v'lav mishum. Dechayesh l'kviyam. So Rashi writes that as far as this is concerned, this is where Rabbi Shimon will also agree. In other words, even though his scope of muksa is extraordinarily limited, nevertheless, he will agree that when you have something which is buses, which is a base for something that is usr, so then not only does the usr item, but everything that is based on it is going to be muksa as well. The Kli says Rashi, I'm going to highlight the words of Rashi, which seem to be extraordinarily significant. Shakli tafel l'shal heves. The Kli now becomes subordinate to the flame, but oh dabo, as long as the flame is there. This has nothing to do with maybe it's going to go out. That's irrelevant according to Rabbi Shimon. Because even if it does, it's a davar shenu miskaven. But while the flame is lit, so now the wick and the oil, and we'll also add now the lamp as well, all become a base for it, and therefore that's why you can't move it according to Rabbi Shimon. Now obviously Rabbi Yehuda himself subscribes to the idea of buses, but the chiddush of Rava is that Rabbi Shimon also subscribes to the principle of buses. It goes without saying, but let's say it. Why, according to Rabbi Shimon, would I be able to move it after it goes out? So, because as we already pointed out in the introduction, Rabbi Shimon doesn't subscribe to Migudis Katsai. Meaning, since it's not, even though, let's start the sentence off a little bit better. Even though it was prohibited during the Benes Moshos period, but Rabbi Shimon doesn't subscribe to the principle Migudis Katsai Benes Moshos Itzkatsai Kula Yoma. So he subscribes to the principle of buses, but he doesn't subscribe to the migu. So that means to say that once the flame goes out, so now the wick and the oil and the lantern are no longer a buses for Davar Aser and for Rabbi Shimon, for the balance of Shabbos, you're allowed to move it. Okay, Adkan. So that brings us now to the, and the Gemara is satisfied with this answer that Rava provides. And so once we're on the topic of buses, so the Gemara wants to spend a little more time discussing this issue of buses. I'm Rabbi Zer, I'm Rabbi Asi, I'm Rabbi Yochanan, I'm Rabbi Chanina, I'm Rabbi Rumanos. So the Gemara quotes the following: Li hitter Rabbi letalta machte be'afra. So the Rabbi gave me a hitter. Now it seems to be that this goes all the way back to Rabbi Rumanos, who's the one who is the speaker of this comment. Rabbi gave me the hitter that I can move an ashtray with ashes on it. Now, it's not exactly an ashtray, just my way of thinking of it, right? Machta, some sort of pan, and Afer is the ashes. Okay, but he allowed me to move an ashtray on Shabbos. Amalei Rebbe Zera le Rebbe Asi. Now, it is a curiosity, and we already tried to ascertain, did Rebbe Yehuda Anasi subscribe to the Shita of Rebbe Yehuda, or did he subscribe to the Shita of Rebbe Shimon? And the Gemara raised this issue, and the Gemara left this issue unresolved. So we don't know exactly where Rebbe stands on the machlokes between Rebbe Shimon and Rebbe Yehuda, but let's assume right now that we're having this discussion within Rebbe Shimon, even though we have not clarified whether Rebbe actually subscribes to Rebbe Shimon. But anyway, so Amalei Rebbe Zera le Rebbe Asi mi Amar Rebbe Yochanan Hachi. Now remember, this was given to us through Rebbe Yochanan. Meaning, if you look back at the Shalshalas, the tradition that this halacha was passed down to, it was said over the name of Reb Zera, in the name of Rav Asi, in the name of Rav Yochanan. So this is given to us by Rav Yochanan. So that means to say that Rav Yochanan also would subscribe to this. Now, Rav Yochanan, we know for sure, does in fact follow like Rav Yehuda. Okay. And that we've already established. But the Gemara says, Vatanan, let's consider now the following Mishnah. This Mishnah comes up later in the Masechta. Notel adam benova avin biyado. O kalkala va avin besocha. A person can carry a son even though his son is currently holding a stone. In other words, we're talking about a minor. And the stone obviously represents muksa. So when he picks up his son, he's picking up his son and he's picking up muksa as well. Or a person can pick up a basket. The assumption is that the basket has fruit in it. And there's also a stone in the basket as well. And va'ama rabba v'chana amar rab yochan v'kalkala malaya peres askina. And this detail, that the basket has fruit in it, so this is given to us by Rav Yochanan. And why is that an important detail? Because as the Gemara here spells out the issue, time of the Yisbei Peira. The only reason that one is allowed to carry the basket on Shabbos is because the basket is a basis, it's a base, but it's a base for something which is mutter, the fruit, and something which is prohibited, the rocks. So when you see that when something is a basis, l'davar ha mutter v'davar aser, so we see that under those circumstances, one can then go ahead and pick up the basket. Ha'leif be'peir lo, with the clear implication that if the only thing that the basket has was just rocks and it didn't have any fruit in it, so then you can't pick up the basket. Because the basket only now serves as a basis l'davar aser, but not for something which is mutter. And therefore the basket now has the status of being a basis, and then you wouldn't be able to pick up the basket. And so let's now try to go back over here. We're talking about an ashtray. So the tray itself may have functionality. But right now what's in the tray? Ashes. And presumably ashes are muksa. And it's a davar aser. So if the ashtray only has ashes in it, it is now only a basis l'davar aser. And what would then be the allowance that Rebbe is giving, that's quoted by Rabbi Yochanan, that you'd be allowed to go ahead and to move this tray with ashes on it? So it's a really strong question. Ishtama kechadasha. So he was taken by surprise. He was quiet, meaning he didn't know how to answer the question. The Amar Hakinami Diisbe Kartin. So in an attempt now to answer this question, so he said, well, maybe the tray in question over here doesn't just have ashes on it. It also has grains of incense as well. This incense is purposeful on Shabbos. Rashi describes that you can go ahead and you can smell it. And so now this becomes similar to a basket that's filled with fruit and rocks, meaning it's a basis davar hamotzei v'davar aser. So the Gemara is suggesting maybe that's what's going on over here. Now, and you go back to the statement of Rebbe. Rebbe didn't say that, but we're just trying to wrap our heads around the idea. Well, what would be the allowance to move this ashtray? And right now, we don't have an answer, so we're suggesting, well, maybe there's an important detail, and that is that there were actual granules of incense as well on the tray. So Amar Abai Kartan Be Rebbe Michashiva. So Abai says, let's assume that you're even right, that there were granules of incense. So as far as Rebbe's concerned, is that significant to him? As we know, the Gemara reminds us numerous times, Rebbe was wealthy. In fact, some Gemaras describe Rebbe as being one of the wealthiest people in the history of the Jewish people. So he was extraordinarily wealthy. And that meant that for Rebbe, these granules, really for him, were perfectly insignificant. And as the Gemara is about to articulate, so when it comes to something which is called a davar hamutar, it's not something which is objectively something that of value, but it has to have subjective value. And as far as Rabbi's concerned, so these granules have no subjective value towards him. And so the Gemara says, so even if you're right, even if there are granules of incense, so what? To Rebbe, they are simply not significant. And the Gemara says, okay, but maybe to Rebbe they have no value, but they have value to poor people. And so therefore, maybe there is an objective value to these granules. And the Gemara quotes the following brisa. That when it comes to judging a garment, in terms of whether it's going to be Mekabel Tumah. So as we made this point earlier in the Masechta, and we get to review again, that when it comes to a poor person, who obviously for him, any swatch of clothing is going to be a commodity, and therefore even if this swatch of fabric is only 3x3 etzbaos, it will be significant. And for a wealthy person, so for him, it will only be significant by 3x3 tfachim, not 3x3 etzbaos. And so, and the Brisa says very clearly, Aval Daniyam La Shirim Lo, but it has to be that it has subjective value to you, and just because it has value to somebody else does not qualify of having value to you. Now, understandably, the Gemara over here is talking about the halachas of Tumah Tahara, and the Gemara is borrowing this concept of Tumah Tahara and applying it to Shabbos, and admittedly that's a bit of a leap, but the Gemara says, but you see, that in order for something to have value, it must have value for you. So Al Amar Abai, so the Gemara says, okay. So we're going to have to go now down a different path. Meaning, even if it did have granules of incense, that's not going to mean anything to Rebbe, and that's not the reason why he allowed moving the ashtray. So the Gemara now is going to try to suggest Al Amar Abai me did have a graf shel rei. So the Gemara says, well, maybe the allowance to move the ashtray over here is because it falls under another category, and that's graf shel rei. Now, it happens to be that in our discussion of Muksa, this is the first time that we've opened up this discussion of Graf Shel Rei. Graf Shel Rei basically means as follows. If, let's say, there was excrement that was in the house on Shabbos. Now, on one hand, we can call the excrement muksa. On the other hand, we could also call that a really unpleasant situation. Meaning, if you have this excrement in the house, so your Shabbos is really going to be significantly compromised. Your enjoyment of Shabbos will be compromised. And now, if the Chachamim deem that muksa, which it is, so now your Shabbos is really going to be uncomfortable. So, what there was an allowance that was given within the world of muksa is that if something is muksa, but at the same time it is really foul odor, it's a foul odor item, so the Chachamim gave an allowance to simply pick it up and take it out of the house. And we all know that on Shabbos you take out the garbage, now the garbage is muksa, but on the other hand, if you just simply leave it in the house, that would be really unpleasant. It falls under the category of Grav Sharei. But really, Grav Sharei is talking about something which is foul smelling. And so the Gemara says over here, so maybe the movement of the ashtray is because the ashes are foul, and so therefore it basically falls into the category of Grav Sharei. So Amar Rav Shnei Tshuvas Bedavar. So Rav says, I do not like that answer. Chada Grav Sharei Maz V'Hain La Mais. So the Gemara says, Grav Sharei, we're talking about excrement that really gives off this very foul odor. Over here, we're talking about ashes. And ashes don't give off a foul odor. And V'od Grav Sharei Migle V'Hamichse. And the Gemara says another thing to take into consideration is that the Grav Sharei is exposed, meaning, like I described, you basically are looking at excrement on the ground, or even if it's not directly covered, but you have baby diaper. So, okay, in other words, the source of that foul odor is right there. Over here, in this tray that we're talking about, so basically it's a covered tray. So with a covered tray, so it doesn't have the heter of Grav Sharei. So Rava says, so it can't be that Rebbe's allowance to move this ashtray has anything to do with it falling under the category of Grav Sharei. Elam Rava ki havina be Rav Nachman. So Rava now is going to give his own answer. And he's going to do so by telling the following. We were at the house of Rav Nachman. Hava metatlinan kununa agav kumta v'af agav di'ikaleh hashivra etzim. Now, kununa Rashi describes as some sort of copper utensil, and it had ashes in it. And even though it had shivra etzim, even though it had pieces of wood on it, and those pieces of wood don't have any purpose, but one is allowed to move them, says Rav Nachman, because of the ashes. And basically what we're introducing ourselves to is the idea that there are times where basically you want the ashes. Who wants the ashes? If you look at Rashi over here, Rashi a little bit lower than when we are in the Gemara. Agav kimte, shayit srichim la'afro, la'achasos roko tsoa. You need the ashes because the ashes are there to cover either spit or excrement. Now, I know it's a little bit strange because just moments earlier we talked about how you can pick up the excrement and take it outside. But basically, under certain circumstances, you'd rather just simply cover it. And so the ashes over here do in fact serve a purpose on Shabbos. And over here, this copper utensil has the ashes on it. Now we're doing a 180. We're saying now the ashes are something you actually want, need, and can use on Shabbos. And together with the fact that a shiver eats them and has pieces of wood in it, and those pieces of wood don't serve any purpose on Shabbos. So now this kenunya, this copper vessel, now is a basis l'davar ha'asur v'davar ha'mutter. It basically now is holding both that which is asur and that which is mutter. And that's why one would be allowed to carry this kenunya on Shabbos. But now, with this Pesach of Rav Nachman, what Rav is showing us is that ashes are something that actually is a davar ha'mutter. Okay? And that is what Rebbe is predicated on. That is why Rebbe allowed one to move this ashtray on Shabbos. Rashi writes in the Dibra Maschalag of Kimte, I just read a little bit of the Rashi. I'm just going to go read a little bit further in the Rashi. V'im tomer matzad iser yesh kan hain rabusa. Now, over here in the ashtray, now that we've done this 180, so Rashi says, so now, it's not even a house of a davar amutter. Now, if the ashes are something that you want and need and serve purpose for you on Shabbos, so now this ashtray is holding what? It's holding only a davar amutter. So Rashi says, so now what's the chiddush? De'afagav di'ik ala shiver eitzim. So in the case of Rav Nachman, the chiddush is that even though I had chunks of wood in it, and those chunks of wood don't have any purpose on Shabbos, and it's the davar muksa. Good, that's in the Rav Nachman case. The had Rav Romanos nami haymachta ba'afra dekamar machta b'shvil afra shayasarich lo v'daitay olayim me'esmo. And the case of where we started the whole discussion, the Rabbi Romanos, who got the psak from Rebbe, and it only had ashes on it, so there it makes it even better. But it makes it better than, but like I said, what's the chiddush? So Rashi over here says, V'rabusa ashmin, and there is a chiddush over here. So we're going to assume also in the case of Rebbe as well that there are chunks of wood over there. And we'll have to assume that because we have to say that Rebbe is providing a chiddush that even though it's a basis of davar ha'asav a davar ha'mutar, and one would have thought that because the shiver etzim are in there as well, that one's not allowed to move it. But just like we learned regarding Rav Nachman, Rebbe was teaching us the same point that when you have a basis of davar ha'asav a davar ha'mutar, one is allowed to carry it on Shabbos. Some people have the minug of taking the Shabbos the nair, the candles, and putting it on the table, but putting it directly on the dining room table. Okay, most people have it somewhere situated within proximity of the table, not directly on the table, but some have the minug of putting it directly on the table. So they put the candles on a tray. And obviously the tray now is going to be a basis of davar aser, which means that after the Shabbos meal, you cannot pick up the candles and move them. You can't pick up the tray and move them. What some people do is that some people put a loaf of bread, for these people who have the candles directly on the table, they take a loaf of bread and they put it on the tray as well. And now the tray is going to be a basis of davar aser v'davar amutter, and therefore one would be allowed to move the tray. Just as long as I brought it up, so it's worthwhile to note, that not everyone is in agreement that this would work in the case of the candles on the tray that's on the table. The loaf of bread may not be significant enough to counteract the candles, meaning that in order to get to this heter of a basis of davar mutar davar aser, so the davar aser davar mutar have to be on par with one another. Okay, so it's an interesting discussion. It's a halachic discussion, an important one. But let's come back over here, Meisvei. We're back in the Gemara. The Gemara now is going to challenge. V'shavishim yesh ba shivrei pesila she'asa l'talta. The Gemara quotes the Braisa says that they're in agreement. Presumably, Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon are in agreement that if there are shivrei pesila, that if there are pieces of wick, so then one would not be allowed to move it. And so we see over here that that when something becomes now a basis for a davar aser, so then you're not allowed to move it. Now, we just learned together that Rabbi Shimon is going to allow you to move it, would allow you to move it after it went out. And over here, he's not allowing you to do so. So, Amar Abaye Beglile Shana. So, Abaye says, no, that was very specific and that's very limited. That's talking about in the Galo. In the Galo, Rashi writes over here, Shechashuvos. Rashi writes, I'm sorry, Rashi Begalilo Shanu, Shechashuvos Lahem Shivrei Psila. The wicks are very significant to the people up in the Galo. Shein Begadim Shal Pishta Mitzuyin Lahem. They didn't have a lot of linen clothing in the Galo. Hilkach Lo Batli Venasei Ner Basis Lahem. And therefore, they do not become batal, they do not become negated. And the nair is going to be a basis for them. And so because it's so significant to the people of the Galil, so therefore you cannot move the lamp because it becomes a basis to this really important commodity to the people of Galil. But that's specific and that's localized. And that and Abaye says, and that wouldn't reflect the general position of Rabbi Shimon, in that once the fire goes out, you're allowed to move the lamp. Okay. Icon that takes us to the first part of today's daf. Really, all we did in the first part of today's daf, we went over a number of different concepts, but all we did is really just respond to yesterday's question, give an answer based on the principle of basis, and then the Gemara just discussed basis in somewhat more detail. So again, just quickly to review what we've seen so far, the question is that according to Rabbi Shimon, why am I not allowed to move the lamp while the lamp is lit? You're allowed to move it according to Rabbi Shimon after it goes out, but while it's lit, you're not allowed to move it, and why not? And the Gemara's response to that is, well, it's because it is a basis of davar ha'aser. The shalhevis, the flame itself, is a davar ha'aser on Shabbos, and the wick and the oil and the lamp are now a base for it. And while Rabbi Shimon is very lenient on the issues of muksa, but nevertheless he subscribes to this concept of this principle of basis. Good, that's the Gemara's answer, and that is the Gemara is comfortable with that principle within Rabbi Shimon. And then, over the course of the discussion, the Gemara then wants to introduce us to the idea of a basis l'davar ha'aser v'davar ha'moter. We saw it based on a psak of Rabbi. We saw it by Rav Yochanan. We saw it by Rav Nachman. Okay, and the Gemara just simply gave us more information regarding basis. For the remainder of the perek, so the Gemara is going to leave the world of muksa, leave the world of cooking, and go back to discuss an issue that came up almost incidentally a couple of days ago regarding the putting together a lamp. We learned that one is not allowed to take a lamp and put it together on Shabbos. And then the discussion that we had, that was on the bottom of a Memhamed Beis, just a couple of days ago, and the discussion that we had, the ensuing discussion that we had, regarding a lamp that was not sectional, but a lamp rather that had grooves in it, and it looks like a sectional lamp. And it looks like a sectional candelabra. Would one be allowed to move that on Shabbos with the concern that if you pick it up, it may break apart, you'll be tempted to put it back together again? So the Gemara had that discussion. What is that discussion revolving around? So I read the Rashi back on Mem Hamad Beis, and I'm going to read the Rashi in just a moment, where it's clear from Rashi that the issue is not bona, it's not building, because we have a principle of ein binyan bekelim, that binyan, the malacha of binyan, is only appropriate, it only applies to something like building a house. But when you're talking about a kli, putting together a kli, so the Gemara says, as a principle, the malacha of binyan does not apply to kelim, ein binyan bekelim. So then what's the issue over here? So we're going to see Rashi in just a moment, that the issue is makeh bepatish, that when you finally put it all together, so you are now putting in the final blow in this item, it's the makeh bepatish, it's the last hammer blow, and so that, says Rashi, is the malacha that is under discussion. Not everyone's in agreement to Rashi, but as far as presenting the Gemara, I'm going to present it just like Rashi. The Gemara starts off by telling us the following. Levi bar Shmuel ashkechino l'Rabbi Abba l'Rav Huna bar Chia d'avikam epischa d'bei Rav Huna. So a number of Amoraim are congregating in front of the house of Rav Huna. Amalu ma'ala achzer mita shal tarsim b'shabbos. So can one put together this bed of the tarsim? Rashi describes tarsim either as some sort of coppersmith or some sort of weaver. Anyway, but Rashi says they travel. Rashi describes how they're going from city to city, and as part of what they're packing a makeshift bed. So the bed assembles and disassembles. So it's a cot of some sort that basically had some sort of pieces where you put the pieces one into the other in order to make some sort of makeshift bed. And would one be allowed to do this on Shabbos? Amar le Shapir Dami. Now Rav Huna gives an interesting ruling, and he says it's fine. Meaning he says it's mutter lagamre. Now, asal akami de Rav Yehuda. Now, this matter came in front of Rav Yehuda. Amr ha Rav Shmuel de Amr Tavaya machzer mita shotar sim b'shabbos chayiv chatas. And the question was posed to Rav Yehuda, who quotes his Rebbeim. We know that Rav Yehuda learned both under Rav and under Shmuel. Sequentially, not at the same time. But he learned under both. And they both are of the opinion that if one were to put together, construct together this makeshift bed, so one would be in violation of a malacha. Now you talk about a range of position. We went from Rav Huna saying that's mutu legamre to the shita of Rav Shmuel who say that one would be chayv chatas, it's an isur daraisa. Now normally in halacha when there is debate, so there are small degrees separating one position from another position. Over here, this is a really wide range, going from it's perfectly acceptable to it's an isur daraisa. Now, there is a Tosfos on the Amud Beis of today that's sensitive to this issue and brings it up and tries to give voice to this idea that we don't normally find such a wide range, and he tries to explain how it is that we have such a wide range. The Rashi is here. Let's read the Rashi together. Chayiv Chatas, Rashi writes that according to Rav Shmuel, if one puts together this makeshift bed, he would be Chayiv a Karban Chatas, meaning it's an Issa Daraisa. What malach are we talking about? Rashi, right. I'm reading the Rashi inside. Rashi is a little bit below where we are in the daf. It's about the fourth wide line. Chayiv chatas hu tchilasa v'gamro v'nimsa ose kli. So Rashi says what you're doing is you're making a kli v'chayiv mishom makeh bepatish. Av l'chol gomrei malacha. So Rashi spells it out. that this falls under the category of makeh b'patzus, which you're putting in the final blow. And that's true for any job that gets finished. V'lo mishum binyan. And Rashi writes clearly, this is not an issue of binyan, the ain binyan b'kelim, because there is no binyan as it relates to kelim. There will be a perek later on in this mesecta dedicated to the topic of binyan. Right? I'd like to say it's the 12th perek. I'm just checking myself right now. It is the 12th perek. Okay. Some memory of this mesecta. And we'll be discussing it in more detail when we get to the 12th parak of the Masefta. But anyway, Rashi over here is extraordinarily clear that the malacha in question over here is makeh b'patish. Fine. Meitzvei, the Gemara now challenges based on the following brisa. So where do we stand right now? I'm putting together this makeshift bed. Rav Huna says it's perfectly acceptable. And Rav and Shmuel say that if one does so, they violate the Issa d'Oraisa makeh b'patish. The Gemara challenges based on the following Tosefta. Ha-machzer kana menorah b'shabbos chayev chatas. If one puts together a menorah on Shabbos, in other words, it was a sectional menorah, and he simply puts it together again, he's chayv kamen chatas. Kanes ayadim lo yachzer. Now, as far as, basically, it's a painter. It's not exactly painting. Rashi describes it more like a whitewash. Either way, in other words, but we can all easily envision the following. So those painters, so when they want to get to the high parts of the wall, so what they do is they take a stick and they insert into another stick, into another one, and that is how they lengthen the stick. Okay, it sounds like modern convention. It's not modern convention. It's something they had in the time of the Gemara. And putting it together on Shabbos, now obviously the painting itself is an Issa d'Oraisa, but just taking this pole and putting it together, lo yachzir, so the Braisa says that you shouldn't do that, v'im hechzir patar val asr. That's an Issa d'Rabbanan. Why is that an Issa d'Rabbanan? Why isn't an Issa d'Oraisa? Why isn't that makeh b'patish? So Rashi basically describes it's not a permanent it's not a permanent connection. As much as you can put the pole together, you can also easily take it out. And so that's not an Issa d'Oraisa, it's an Issa d'Rabbanan. Rabbi Simai Omer Karen Agula Chayev Karen Pshuta Pater. And in this Braisa, the Braisa quotes the position of Rabbi Simai that there are different types of musical instruments, Karen Agula versus a Karen Pshuta. Okay, it's a picture over here would be extraordinarily valuable. But the idea over here is that when you have these instruments and you're putting these instruments together, Karen Agula, so it's a really tight fit. And once you put it together, it's going to be there for a good amount of time. That you're chayav. That's makeh b'patish. The Karen Pshuta, however, whatever instrument it is, when you put it in, it doesn't stay for a long time. And therefore, that would be an Issa d'Rabbanan, not an Issa d'Oraisa. Anyway, what comes out from this braisa very clearly, it supports the position of Rav and Shmuel. And it's very difficult towards the position of Rav Huna. Rav Huna says that if you put together this makeshift bed, it's muta lagamre. Now, muta lagamre is really far away from this braisa. The braisa we just learned together says that it could be an Issa d'Oraisa, but even at best, it's an Issa d'Rabbanan. Aser still is Aser. And how can Rav Huna say that it's muta? So the Gemara suggests as follows. Ino da'amr ki aitana. So as far as Rav Huna is concerned and his constituency, so they're going to hold like the following braisa. Detanya, melavno samita, vikaro samita, ulavachim shel sakibos, lo yachzer v'ima hechzer pater. So these various pieces that fit in. Melavno samita, Rashi basically describes there's some sort of leggings for the bed, or basically the foundation pieces of the bed. So the bed doesn't sink into the ground. The karasamita, or the legs of the bed, and levachim shoskivos, Rashi describes it as some sort of small piece of wood that you insert into the arrow. Okay, it could be that you're putting an arrow together, not totally clear, but whatever the case is. It's pieces that insert into another. So lo yachzer, so this braisa says that you should put it together on Shabbos, v'im hichzer pater v'laser. Now if you do so, it would be rabbinically forbidden. As we now turn to the top of the Amud Beis, v'lo yitaka v'im taka chayev chatas. Now, if it's a really tight fit, so then one would be in violation of an Issa d'Oraisa. Rav Shimon Gamliel Omer im haya rafui mutar. Now, in this braisa, we're introduced to the opinion of Rav Shimon Gamliel, and he says that if one does so, if it's loose fitting, if it's very loose fitting, so then it would be mutar legamri. And now, what the Gemara is suggesting. Saying actually is that the sheet of Rav Huna and his constituency is following the opinion of Shimon ben Gamliel. So it's interesting. The Gemara says that they follow the Braisa. It's really a Shita within the Braisa that they're following. And it's interesting because it's not the Tanakama. And generally speaking, if it's a Yachid versus a Rabban, the Halacha follows like the Rabban, like the Tanakama. And over here, it's interesting that they are taking just the Shita Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel, who is a Shita within the Braisa. But anyway, but there has to be a defense for Rav Huna, and the Gemara just offered it. Bei Rav Chama hava mita galnisa hava mahadrele biyumatava. The house of Rabbi Chama had this kind of bed. And it was basically a makeshift bed that you can assemble and disassemble. And they put it together on Yontav. He says, what do you think right now? It's Binyamin Atzad. It's an expression of the Gemara. And certainly according to Rashi, it can't take the expression too literally, because as Rashi pointed out, we're not talking about Bona, we're talking about Makib Patish. But basically, you can see Rashi inside, in the second line down, Mimesha Eina Tekua Umehadka Bechozek, well, the pieces don't really fit tightly one into the other, Karle Min Atzad. Klamar Ayde Shinui. It just simply means that these are not tight-fitting pieces, and so that's why that's the Gemara's expression of Min Atzad. So the Gemara says, okay, Binyan Min Atzad. So it's not tight-fitting. So Nehide is the Surah Daraisa like Isur Darabana Mi'eika. But you can't put this bed together. Okay, so it's not Isur Daraisa. It's an Isur Darabana. Amarle Anakar Shimon Gamlil Sphirli. The Amar Im Hayarafu Imutar. And the defense, he says, is look, the Braisa that we just quoted on the top of the Amud. The Shita of Shimon Gamliel, who says that if it's not tight fitting, it's mutter legamre, and we are just simply following the position of Rabbi Shimon Gamliel. They must have had some sort of mesorah that this is in fact the accepted halacha. Adkan, that takes us to the end of the Gemara's side discussion regarding assembling and disassembling. Let's continue. We are in the Mishnah on Amud Bey's last Mishnah of the third parak. Nosin klitach asanil kabel nitzotzos. One is allowed to take a kli and put it underneath a burning lantern in order to catch the sparks. However, you can't fill it up with water because in doing so, the sparks are going to land in the water, and then one would be in violation of kibui of putting out those sparks on Shabbos. Now the Gemara says, how can you do that? We go back to a discussion that we had earlier in the parak. In fact, when we first started the topic of Muksa here, this is one of the first discussions that we had, not the very first, but one of the first discussions that we had, and that is being Mevatel Kli Me'echano. If you take a Kli on Shabbos and basically put it out of use, meaning by this Kli now capturing the sparks, so this Kli now becomes Muksa itself, and this is what we described earlier as being mevata kli me'echano. I can't move the kli now. And it's as if, this is Rashi's description that he gave earlier, it's as if I'm taking the kli and basically cementing it into the table or into the ground. And Rashi describes it as almost being like binyan. Now it's funny that I'm bringing up this Rashi right now because Rashi just got done saying that by Kalim, there is no issue of binyan. It doesn't bother me because over here Rashi is just simply saying it looks like binyan, and over here because it looks like binyan, so the Chachamim banned such an activity of taking a kli and putting it out of use. And the Gemara says over here that when I take the kli in order to catch the sparks, am I not violating this principle of being mevatel kli me'echano? So I'm Rav Huna Bereid Rav Yeshua, and it's also saying by Mamish. Now this should sound familiar, because we heard the Gemara say this earlier, but the Gemara is just reviewing now, that, yeah, but we're talking about catching sparks. And sparks do not have mamashas. They don't have any substance to them. And so you're not going to be being mevata the kli just because it's catching a spark. Now, filling the kli that's catching the sparks, filling it with water, so that one is not allowed to do, because then you are involved in kibui. Now, extinguishing. Now, the Gemara says, let's think about this for just a moment. If let's say the wick is burning, take my fingers, right? First I'll lick my fingers, and then I'll put out the wick. So that is actively putting out the flame. So that's kibui biyadayim. That's active extinguishing. Over here, that's not what we're describing. All we're describing over here is filling up this kli with water so that when the sparks come in, so they're going to be extinguished. This falls under the category of gram kivui. This is not actively putting a fire out, but rather passively doing so, or doing so in a way of grama. It's indirect. Now, we're going to learn later in the Masechta, much later in the Masechta, is one allowed to be involved in gram kivui? It's a machlokis amongst the Tanayim. Over here, our Mishnah seems to be taking a very clear position in this, in that gram kivui would be aser. And lema tanan stomach Rabbi Yossi, dama garim l'kivui aser. Now, it would seem to be that our Mishnah over here is subscribing to the viewpoint of Rabbi Yossi. We're going to learn later in the Masechta that Rabbi Yossi is of the opinion that one is not allowed to be involved even in gram kivui. The case we're going to discuss much later in the Masechta is basically with the fire that started on Shabbos. So in order to put out the fire, we're not talking about a case where there's human life that is involved. If human life is involved, then you put out the fire on Shabbos and you do so the quickest way possible. We're talking about when there's no human life that's involved, and we're just talking about financial loss. So there is a discussion, a debate, whether or not you can make a wall in the path of the fire, and basically you're going to put vessels filled with water, so that as the fire is approaching, so it's going to burn the vessels, allow the water to come out, and put out the fire. Another example of gram kivui. And there's a debate whether that's allowed or not allowed, and Rav Yossi says it's not allowed, because Rav Yossi prohibits gram kivui. Now the Chachamim allow it. So our Mishnah over here seems to be in line with the Shita Rav Yossi. Now our Mishnah is an anonymous Mishnah, which would be very significant in terms of determining whether or not the halacha falls like Rav Yossi. And our Mishnah certainly seems to be of the position that Rav Yossi is being supported by Stam Mishnah. So the Gemara says, do you mean to tell me now that our Mishnah is falling like Rav Yossi? V'tizbra, the Gemara says, but I'm not convinced. Eim adam Rav Yossi b'shabes, b'rav shabes mi'amar. So the Gemara says, Rav Yossi's position is talking about Shabbos, but here we're talking about Erev Shabbos. Now v'chite ma'achanami b'shabes. Now the Gemara says, now maybe we're talking about on Shabbos itself. V'atanya nosin kli tachas anir l'kabal nitzotzos b'shabes v'ein tzarech lamar b'erev Shabbos. Over here, the Braisa is very clear. In terms of putting the plate in order to catch the sparks, but this plate doesn't have water, that could be done on Shabbos, it could be done before Shabbos. V'lo yitin l'socha mayim im neshu mechabe me'erev Shabbos. V'ein tzarech lamar b'shabes. However, putting water in this kli, that you can't do. You can't do this neither on Shabbos, and you can't even do it on Erev Shabbos. Now, if you think about it for just a moment, can't even do it on Erev Shabbos. Erev Shabbos is no malach of kibui, and all you're doing is just creating a scenario in which on Shabbos itself it's going to go up, but you're not even doing it on Shabbos. So over here we are, this obviously falls under the category of Gzeira, fine. But it's very clear over here that we're talking about both on Shabbos and we're talking before Shabbos as well in terms of not putting water in. So El Amar Rav Ashi, Afilu Tem Rabbanan. So Rav Ashi says no. We don't have to limit our Mishnah to just going like the Shita of Rabbi Yossi. We could say that our Mishnah is following the Shita of the Chachamim as well. Shani Hakim and Mesha Mekarev Es Kivuyav. Over here, it's not that you're just simply putting water in and the water is extinguishing the sparks, the flying sparks, but rather what you're doing is you're accelerating the kibui. Now, what does that mean over here that you're accelerating the kibui? It's not totally clear. I'm going to read the Rashi inside. Elam Ravashi, I'm reading two Rashis. Rashi writes, the second to last Rashi of the Perek, Am masisan afilu rabbanan delodam legram kibui, da'asam kimata deleka lekelem, delekahu depaka lehu, vigrama ba'amahu. So Rashi describes, in that wall of water that I described earlier, so there, that really is grama, because it is the fire that is encroaching onto the wall, and the wall is not doing anything, it really is a passive participant. And when the fire hits the wall and allows the water to come out, that is grama. Aval zeh shenasan hamayim mamish tachas haner, mechaba mamish hu, ugzera mibe'od yom atu mishechashecha. But over here, when you're filling the water, so this Rashi describes as being mechabe mamish. You are actively putting out the sparks. Now, again, as I say this Rashi, I'm not perfectly clear what Rashi means by that. Why is this more of a direct action than an indirect action? Meaning, it's not that you're pouring the water on the sparks. I don't believe that's the case. The case is that the sparks are landing in the water, But somehow, when you're filling it with water, this is a more active action than it is a passive action. Certainly, that's what Rashi's driving at. For me to try to articulate why that should be, I'm struggling a little bit. The last Rashi, Shemakarav is Kivuya, Rashi says, Zimen Kivui Lehejya. Here you're creating a situation of Kivui. Vavle Mechabe Mamish. This falls under the category of active Kivui. Ihavi Yavle B'Shabbos, if I put it on the Shabbos. And again, as Xera extends, even Erev Shabbos as well. Okay, so admittedly, I'm a little bit at a loss in terms of explaining how this is more active than it is a case of Grama, but clearly that's what the Gemara is driving at. Clearly that's what Rashi is pointing to. I'm limited in the way I'm explaining the Gemara. I'll just end off today with a wonderful point by Tosfos. And that is, think of the following question. For those of us who light with oil, so generally speaking, and even for those of us who don't, but on Hanukkah, everyone can envision the following if you're lighting with oil on Hanukkah. And that is, how do we normally set up the glasses? So we put a layer of water, followed then by a layer of oil, followed then by the wick, and we light it. And it's just wonderful to think about, if this is what we're doing, aren't we basically creating a situation of kivui? Meaning that when all the oil comes out, when all the oil is burnt out, so what's going to happen now is that the wick is going to hit the water, and it's going to go out. And much like the Gemara says over here, by putting a bowl under the sparks, that is active kivui, even according to the Chachamim, and it would be prohibited. So what's the difference between that and the case of what many of us do in terms of lighting oil lamps, where it's a base of water, followed then by a layer of oil, followed then by the wick, and followed by the flame? Isn't that also going to be a form of kivui, and shouldn't that be prohibited? So this is not a new question. This question goes all the way back to Tosfos. The last Tosfos in the Perek deals with it, and I'm just going to read to you a piece of this Tosfos. It is the last, let's say, four or five lines of Tosfos. Umashe regilim. It's the last three words of the line. Umashe regilim lasseis mayim b'zechuchis shekaren lampa v'nosan la shemen b'erev Shabbos. So Tosfos says, look, it's our minog, and that we first put in our lantern a base of water, followed then by the oil, and then we light it. Ein zekari kiruv kivui. So Tosfos says this does not fall under the category of accelerated kivui. The kevan she'ein miskaven lekivui klal ela lahagvias hashemen lo shayech lemigzer midi. Over there, what you're doing is you're putting in the water over there not for the purposes of kivui. You're putting over the water in there to raise the level of the oil. So therefore, it is not that your intention is not for kivui. Shema yaseh b'shab. I'm sorry. Lo shayach lemigzer midi. Shema yaseh b'shab is for shari. And so therefore, there's no reason to make gzeira, and that's why it would be allowed. Now, what Tosos seems to be suggesting in terms of, in other words, Tosos is saying it's perfectly okay. The issue is, why is it perfectly okay? What Tosos seems to be saying is that, look, you're doing this on Erev Shabbos, you're not doing it on Shabbos. On Erev Shabbos, it's going to be an issue. Why? Because of the gzeira. Because if I do this on Erev Shabbos, I come to do this on Shabbos as well. What Tosos seems to be saying is that over here, even though in effect it's basically doing the same thing, meaning you're putting the water in over there and eventually the fire will go out in the water, but that wasn't your intention. Your intention of putting the water in there, in over there, wasn't to put out the fire. Your intention was just simply to raise the level of the oil. And since the water was put in there not for purposes of kivui, but only for the purposes of raising the level of the oil, so the, under these circumstances, no gzeira was made that if I end up doing it this way on Erev Shabbos, so then it'll come to me doing kivui on Shabbos itself. That's the way I'm reading Tosfos. Could be wrong. But that seems to be what Tosfos is driving at in terms of why the practice would be okay. Hajran Lachkira, that is the end of the third parak of the Masechta. Tomorrow morning, we will start the fourth parak together. Let's just quickly recap our morning. The first thing we did is we discussed why exactly would it be that according to Rabbi Shimon, I can't move the lamp on Shabbos itself even while it's lit. Rabbi Shimon doesn't subscribe to Muksa. After it goes out, you're allowed to move the lamp. Why can't I move it even while it's lit? It's a davar she'eino miskaven, even if it were to go out. Rabbi Shimon says davar she'eino miskaven is mutter. And the answer is basis. Because while it's lit, so the oil and the wick are a basis to the flame. And so therefore, that is why you're not allowed to move the move the lamp while it's lit. Because Rabbi Shimon subscribed to the idea of buses. And the Gemara then took us on a discussion regarding a buses for a davar ha'asar vidavar motor. And the Gemara gave a number of scenarios where there's both Isser and Heter on top of the base, and there's an allowance to move it under those circumstances. The third parak ended off, well, the Gemara spent a lot of time up to the last Mishnah discussing assembling and disassembling various kelim, makeshift beds, musical instruments, the long paintbrush. So assembling and disassembling. And there is admittedly a wide range of position regarding assembling and disassembling. For the makeshift bed, Rav Huna says it was mutar lagamre. Rav and Shmuel say that it's an iser d'oraisa. Rashi says that this is all falling under the category of makeh bepatish if we're saying it's an iser d'oraisa. And then we quoted braisas. Anyway, the tendency of the Amoraim were to be lenient. Rav Huna was lenient, and so were the Amoraim on the top of the Amud Beis. And they're all really resting on the sheet of Rav Shimon ben Gamliel, that as long as it's a loose connection, it's not a tight connection. So then Rav Shimon ben Gamliel says it's mutar lagamre, and that's who the Amoraim are subscribing to. And then finally, the last Mishnah and the Gemara that we covered is, let's say sparks are flying off of the lantern, and you want to just basically have a receptacle to catch the sparks. So the Mishnah says you are allowed to do that, but you're not allowed to fill it with water. Now, putting the kli under the to catch the sparks, you could do that on Erev Shabbos, you could do that even on Shabbos itself. In terms of adding water, you can't add water not on Shabbos and not before Shabbos. Now, as far as if it has no water in it, so it's not a violation of being mevatel kli mehechano, because the sparks are insignificant. In terms of adding water, so the Gemara describes it as kivui. The Gemara thinks that this falls under the category of gram kivui. It is just an indirect way of extinguishing. But the Gemara concludes, no, it's not gram kivui. By putting the water in the bowl, it's actually kivui itself. It is an acceleration of kivui. The Gemara's terminology is mekarev is kivuyav. You're accelerating the kivui, and therefore it's going to be aser. And then we just dealt with Tosus' question, well, how do we set up our glasses to light Shabbos licht with the base of water and the oil? Isn't that also a function of gram kivui? And Tosus says it's mutter. And we went through Tosus why it is that it would be mutter.